This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodelbank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining me today is Professor Derek Ward-Thompson from the University of Cardiff. Derek works on the formation of stars. Would you please tell us how stars form to start off with?
Yes, well, it all begins in the space between the stars. Space isn't completely empty between the stars. There is a very small amount of gas and dust that we call the interstellar medium. Now, if you had a test tube full of this interstellar medium in the lab, it would constitute a very good vacuum, because space is pretty empty. But the fact is that it's not completely empty, and it's this little amount of gas and dust in your test tube that eventually will form the next generation of stars. And the reason why it does is because space is so big, you've essentially got an awful lot of test tubes full of interstellar medium out in space, and all of matter experiences gravity, as we know. And under the gravity of all of this matter, it gradually falls together, just as you would fall if you jumped off a tall building under gravity, and it all collects together in the centre to form a star. And that's all well and good. We think we understand at least some of the aspects of that. Now, you might say, what's this interstellar medium made of? And it's very largely hydrogen gas with some traces of helium and various other elements. And then about 1% of it is dust. And this dust is largely in the form of what we call silicates. And silicate is just sand, like the sand on the beach, except the grains of dust in the interstellar medium are very much smaller than the grains of sand on the beach. They're much more like, for example, the size of grains of tobacco smoke. And as you're aware, light has difficulty penetrating tobacco smoke, looking across a smoke-filled room. And so in order to see through the dust, we go to much longer wavelengths. And so we're quite excited at the moment about a new telescope, which is going to work at these much longer wavelengths, that's currently being built in the Atacama Desert, high up in the Andes of Chile. And this telescope is called ALMA, which stands for the Atacama Large Millimeter Array. And because it works at such long wavelengths, it can see into the dust, so it can help us in understanding this process of stars as they're forming.
So this lets you penetrate through, like in the optical, just dark regions of space. This lets you see straight through to these regions.
Exactly, exactly. And one of the things that I've been working on myself lately is looking at double stars or binary stars. Now, the listeners will probably be familiar with the double star in Ursa Major, Mizar and Alcor, which is, in fact, a double-double star. But a double star or a binary star is where you have one star which orbits another. And we believe that for a lot of them, they actually form at the same time and they form together. And up to now, we've not been able to see these in the process of forming. But with this new telescope, we expect to be able to see a lot of these double stars in the process of forming.
What makes a double star formation different from a single star formation?
Well, that's a very good question, and we're still trying to understand the processes that are going on. But what we think must be happening is that the interstellar medium that in the first case, out of which the stars are going to form, is actually rotating. So it's spinning. And there's a process that we call the conservation of angular momentum, which is where as things get smaller, they have to spin faster. And your listeners will be familiar, no doubt, with the example of a figure skater on ice who spins around with their arms held out wide. And then when they pull their arms into their sides, they spin faster. They spin up faster. And that's the conservation of angular momentum. And what we see when one of these clouds of interstellar medium collapses under its own gravity is that if it is spinning very slowly, even to start with, then as it collapses and gets smaller, it will spin faster and faster. And if there's enough spin, then instead of the material all collapsing down to one point in the centre, it might collapse to two or more different points, which might then explain how you end up with a double star or perhaps a double-double star even.
So how many could it collapse into?
Oh, many. We see many examples of double stars, of triple stars, of double doubles. There are many different types of system. I suspect there probably isn't an upper limit, but the most common are the doubles, and these are the ones we're trying to understand. And in particular, with the telescopes we've got at the moment, we can get a glimpse of some of this, but obviously with the new ALMA telescope, we'll get to see a lot more detail of this. But there's one particular double star that we've been looking at in the constellation of Ophiuchus, where we believe it's a double star, but the two stars themselves are spinning around different axes, so the spins are misaligned to each other. And this is very difficult to explain if the original interstellar medium is just rotating or spinning in a single direction. Why should then these two stars be spinning in different directions by the time they've formed? And one of the explanations might be that perhaps these initial conditions are very chaotic and you have material moving in different directions. Now, you might say, what actually causes this rotation, this spin in the first place? And there are a number of ways it might start. We already know that all of our Milky Way galaxy is orbiting around the centre of the galaxy, what we call the galactic centre, just in the same way as the planets orbit around the Sun. And the further we are from the centre of the galaxy, the slower we rotate, the slower we orbit. And so if material comes from different distances from the centre of the galaxy and comes together under its own gravity, then it might be moving at different velocities, different speeds, and hence have different amounts of rotation. And that might be what causes the spin-up in the first place. Now, if that's the case, then what we would see is the picture I outlined earlier of perhaps two or more stars, but all spinning in the same direction. In order to get them to spin in different directions, we need really much more chaotic conditions. And perhaps what this is telling us is that the interstellar medium is a much more chaotic place than we thought.
So what could cause this chaos?
Oh, all sorts of things. The most energetic, perhaps, is a supernova explosion. So as your listeners will be aware, some stars, when they die very energetically with a gigantic explosion, which shoots material at very, very high speeds off into space. And this travels through the interstellar medium, stirring it up very greatly and causing it to be moved around at very high velocities. Now, there are also slightly less energetic things, such as the winds from stars. Now, we all know the Sun has what we call the solar wind, but in fact, all stars have a wind like the solar wind, and these stir up the interstellar medium slightly more gently than a supernova explosion, but this can all contribute to these chaotic motions. And maybe one of the things that we will learn is that the interstellar medium is in fact a very chaotic place, and that perhaps misaligned spinning double stars might actually be the norm rather than the exception.
So at the moment these are very, very rare, and you've only seen one or two.
That's correct. We've seen perhaps a handful, but we don't know whether that's just simply as a result of the fact of our current telescopes not being sufficiently sensitive. Because remember, even a telescope like the Hubble Space Telescope still only works at visible wavelengths, and so suffers from the same problem as all other visible telescopes, that it can't see into the centres of these things because of the dust, the smoke-filled room blocking off the light. And this ALMA will be the first time we will have had access to a very long wavelength telescope that can see into the smoke-filled room, but with sufficient resolution to be able to resolve these double stars in the process of forming, and maybe to answer the question whether the misaligned spinning double stars are actually the norm rather than the exception.
So this would revolutionise the star formation.
It has the potential to completely shift our ideas of what's going on. So, of course, it's a very exciting time. Now, these things are very difficult to observe because the whole process is over relatively quickly in astronomical terms. It only takes roughly 1 million to 10 million years for a star to form.
So how much is that in terms of a star's lifetime?
Oh, that's only a very small fraction of the total lifetime of a star. A star can live for a few billion years. So in astronomical terms, 1 million years is the blinking of an eye. Now, in human terms, obviously, it's a little bit longer than that. But what we have to do is look around in space for stars that are exactly at this time in their lives when they are forming during this 1 or 2 million years, and try and catch them in the process.
So a star forms very, very quickly in terms of a lifetime, and I guess you have to look around for lots and lots of objects to try and catch this going on.
That's exactly right. And of course, what determines how long it takes is not only the conditions that you have initially in the interstellar medium, but also the mass of the star that you're trying to form. So a star the same mass as the Sun might take a few million years, but one that's considerably more massive might only take 1 million years. And so, as you say, we have to look around in different parts of our local, as we call it, space. I should define what I mean by local there. The double star I was talking about in Ophiuchus is something like about 500 light years away. But in astronomical terms, that's right next door. And so we're looking at stars at these kind of distances. And that's, of course, why we need the resolution to be able to see what's going on.
So are these stars emitting light yet, or are they still not even in that stage of their formation?
That's right, they're not even in that stage yet. They're emitting what we call infrared radiation, which is, of course, just heat. And it's this heat from the stars that we're detecting. But certainly they haven't turned into what we would think of as a star yet. They certainly don't burn in the same way as the Sun burns. The energy from the Sun comes from nuclear reactions, the hydrogen being turned into helium, which is exactly the same reaction as happens in an H-bomb. But that reaction isn't actually happening yet in these stars. They haven't got together enough mass to make that switch on. But what we're actually looking at is just the heat from these objects as they're warming up, as they're collapsing, and that's what we're detecting.
And do these objects tend to form with massive stars together, or a massive star and a little star together, or any combination of this?
We see all varieties. You see some double stars where the two stars are the same size. You see others where one is 10 times the size of the other, and everything in between, really. So again, trying to understand what would determine that is also a big question. We believe this particular one in Ophiuchus might be forming two of roughly the same size. But again, that will depend on how their evolution progresses.
And this is what we need ALMA for, to see into this new, well, hidden world of star formation.
Exactly. That's right. We're looking forward to taking these new observations, which hopefully will be taken sometime next year.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us on the Jodcast.
Thank you for inviting me.